WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is April 8th, Monday morning. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Mix of sun and clouds today. The high 63. Tonight and overnight, the clouds roll in during the evening hours, low 52. And then Tuesday will be partly cloudy, but the high is going to be 73. Got to like that. If you are walking out the door with us right now, it is 37 and clear in New City up in Rockland County, 36 and clear down in Edison in New Jersey. And it is 42 and clear outside our Midtown studio. So much to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour, sit in friends in the morning. Of course, all the talk today will be the solar eclipse. Some 44 million people live in within the path of totality. Those are the people who are going to be where the sun will completely disappear for about 3 to 4 minutes. Places like Dallas, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Buffalo. I have friends who were up in Rochester today, all excited about this. Now, there is an issue. The weather may not totally cooperate for some of those people who drove hours on end to get to some places or flew to places like Texas to see this. So we'll have to wait as the day goes on and we'll get a better sense of that. But I was looking at the forecast in Syracuse, which is one of the places that'll have totality at 325 this afternoon. And it's going to be cloudy there. So I don't know how much that's going to affect it. If it's going to be full on clouds, you'll be able to, or you'll get total darkness. We'll have to wait and see all this together. So up in Syracuse, the locals there, they've been watching as the tourists have been driving in or flying in to see this.
The town is buzzing. We've been talking about it for months, but just over the past couple weeks, things have really picked up. Everybody's got their plans. Everybody's got their glasses. All the local bakeries and donut shops have their eclipse themed goods.
You know, my friend who's in Rochester, I had the same reaction. He said, I've never thought of going to Rochester before. Syracuse might be the same thing. I'm not saying they're not spectacular places. They may be, but it's not just on my brain to visit there. So this is good, I guess, for upstate New York tourism. Here's somebody who's in Syracuse who's worried about the cloud cover this afternoon.
It almost feels like I'm always getting the short end of the stick nowadays, so that's unfortunate, but hopefully the clouds clear up and we see a little bit of something.
Students at Syracuse University, of course, debating whether to skip classes for the solar eclipse today. Classes are on, and my guess, you know, I think this is a big enough event to skip class.
The only class I have tomorrow is from 2:15 to 3:35. Right, and obviously during the path of totality, so most people are canceling class, professors and people are skipping. It's like, do I skip class? Do I leave early? I don't know what I'm going to do.
I never had that thought, do I skip class? I thought if I'm going to skip class, I'm just skipping class. Didn't think too hard about it. Do I have to remind you not to look at the directly at the sun or at the solar eclipse? But apparently this is an issue that people would think that they should just be able to stare for 4 solid minutes at the solar eclipse today. It's not a good idea. Christina Hayek of the Cranberry Lake Preserve in Westchester County says if you plan to look directly at the eclipse, make sure you wear eclipse glasses, which I think should be obvious.
Much more effective. Your standard sunglasses aren't going to be as effective. You can still cause damage to your eyes.
These glasses are hard to get, by the way. If you go to WABCradio.com, it might be too late to get them today. But if you go to places like the public libraries, we're giving them away, New York City public libraries. I don't know if any of them have them in stock. I saw people were having a hard time yesterday finding them. 7-Eleven was selling some approved ones. A whole bunch of stores had them, but most were out of stock as people got closer to today. Said, oh, wait a minute, I want a pair. So if you didn't get a pair, and you don't know anybody that has a pair that you can share with, you can still watch this with a colander, like something you know, like a spaghetti drainer. It'll create a pinhole effect and project mini eclipses on the ground or wall. So you can look at it for a second and then look through this to sort of see what's happening. So that's one way to do it.
Hold it up and you'll get like 1,000 little suns on the wall and you can just watch it that way.
Yeah, I remember that eclipse from when I was a kid where we did it with a pinhole and It's a whole complicated thing. Anyway, the sunglasses seem much better if you can get a pair of those.
You used to go outside and you take your little magnifying glass and shine it on the blade of grass. Imagine that's happening for 3 to 5 minutes on the back of your retina.
Yeah, so look, just, you know, don't be an idiot. Don't stare at it. It's kind of like don't stare at the sun. Do I have to say that? But maybe you do. Wildlife, we will watch to see what they do because when it sort of turns to almost nighttime, because we're going to get like 89 to 91% coverage, how will animals respond?
Some of our nocturnal animals might come out. Our owls might start calling. Our frogs might start calling. Vultures might come to roost.
Yeah, so the thought is that the eclipse could be confusing and stressful for pets, that maybe you should leave them in the house. I mean, I wasn't thinking about bringing my dog outside. And there were some people who said, do I need glasses for my dog? Okay. I mean, dogs don't usually stare at the sun.
The eclipse is kind of like having a sunset and a sunrise in the middle of the day.
Yeah. So some of this is, you know, they related back to other solar eclipses to see how animals respond during the great solar eclipse of 2017. Researchers observed cows bedding down in the daytime, dogs going eerily silent, tortoises getting frisky. Well, that was some of the what took place in 2017, and some of these places where it'll be a full-on solar eclipse today, they'll be watching the animals closely to see how they respond. You can pay to get into some spots to see it today, like go to the top of the rock, Rockefeller Center. The Empire State Building is holding a viewing party where you'll get protective glasses and champagne when you get to the top of the tower. Lots of tourists who have flown in from around the world, they're taking advantage of that.
It's a magic because you will have like a night during the day. Even if it's only 2 minutes, I think it's one of the things you don't see every time, because the next one will be maybe in, we will always not be in this world.
I'm probably never going to get another opportunity to see it, so I'm glad it happens while we're here.
Yeah, so here's where it's all going to begin about 2:10 this afternoon. It'll start to take place, this eclipse. It'll be full throttle at about 3:25 this afternoon. That's going to be the height of what we'll see here in New York City. And then it'll all be gone. The eclipse will be over by about 4:36. So we're talking about a two-hour event. Oh, wait, before I go to Lori Blanchard in traffic, this rock website is going to play Dark Side of the Moon, and they're going to time the album so it works perfectly to sync up with the eclipse, so that the closing line from the last song on the album will play as the eclipse happens. This is at a website.
And everything under the sun is in tune, and the sun is a eclipse by the moon.
Yeah, so if it works right, they'll time it out right to the end of that song. That might be the only time you hear Pink Floyd this morning, because Sid has banned them on Sid and Friends in the Morning. WABC News Time 5:10. Let's go down to Texas. Texas Governor Greg Abbott accusing President Biden of using migrants as political pawns.
Joe Biden has created this open border policy that has allowed illegal immigrants into our country to appeal to and to appease the far leftists in the Democrat Party, the people like Ocasio-Cortez, in hopes of trying to win their support while at the same time destroying the country that he's in charge of.
Tensions between Abbott and the White House continue to rise over the surge of migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Texas and the administration are currently locked in this legal battle over a law that would allow local law enforcement in Texas to arrest those suspected of entering the country illegally. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has some advice for Mayor Adams dealing with the migrant issue here.
And what Mayor Adams needs to do, he needs to stop talking boldly about illegal immigration and the migrants that Texas is sending there, and he needs to step up and do his own job, because look at the dangers in New York City under his watch.
Yeah, we'll see if he follows those instructions. 5:11, down to Maryland. Maryland Governor Wes Moore says maritime operations in the port of Baltimore could resume as early as May.
It is an aggressive timeline, but we are going to work around the clock to make sure that we hit this timeline.
Yeah, the governor's saying he doesn't know just yet what the cost will be to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge and reopen the port. The bridge, of course, collapsed after it was hit by a cargo ship late last month. The governor gonna visit Capitol Hill this week to discuss funding for reconstructing the Francis Scott Key Bridge with lawmakers who are returning from the Easter break.
I don't know what the Baltimore skyline looks like without the Key Bridge. It's been there since I've been alive. And it's now sitting in the bottom of the river.
And did you see this over the weekend? A ship experiencing problems near the Verrazano brought to mind the collapse in Baltimore. The Coast Guard says it got a report Friday night about a cargo ship that lost power right near the bridge. The crew got the ship functioning at least in part, but tugboats helped it to shore. The ship has since undergone repairs over the weekend and got the required certification to go back into service. But there was a moment they were like, uh-oh, here we are near the Verrazano Bridge. Thank God nothing took place there. 512. Let's go overseas. Celebrity chef and humanitarian Jose Andres questioning Israel's objective in its war against Hamas.
This doesn't seem a war against terror. This doesn't seem anymore a war about defending Israel. This really, at this point, seems it's a war against humanity itself.
That's what he said of talking about the Israeli drone strike that killed seven aid workers from his charity group, the World Central Kitchen in Gaza. The Israeli military claims a series of failures led to that deadly attack.
This is not anymore about the seven men and women of World Central Kitchen that perished on this unfortunate event. This is happening way for too long.
So that incident, of course, sparked widespread criticism against Israel's military offensive in Gaza, including from the White House, who called on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to implement concrete steps to protect civilians and humanitarian aid workers in Gaza. Now, maybe you've been watching this over the last 48 hours. The Israeli troops have, for the most part, pulled out of Gaza. Now, some suggesting maybe this is the end to the war. Israelis are saying, no, this is all about sort of just giving some of the troops some rest and bringing fresh troops in. Of course, we'll watch this. That is the World Food Program Executive Director, Cindy McCain, says Gaza is on the verge of famine.
Children are dying as we speak, and those that are not dying or haven't died yet are so emaciated and lacking so much in the way of important nutrients at this particular time in their life cycles. They will, if they do live, they'll never recover from it.
And she says there's just too many challenges trying to get food into the people who are hungry.
Right now, Gaza is getting all the attention, and understandably. We cannot forget Sudan, DRC Congo, Somalia, Yemen, Haiti, as you mentioned. These are parts of the world that are literally on the brink of causing some even larger food crisis than are already happening right now. And I speak specifically to Sudan on that.
And the Democrats in Washington, of course, this is a tough issue with the Israel issue in terms of the elections. How do you bring in the left-leaning part of the party who's against the war in Gaza? And then, of course, Jewish voters, for the most part, are in favor of this war. Maryland Senator Chris Von Hollen, he's been pretty outspoken against the war.
The president has made requests to the Netanyahu government. They have ignored those requests, and we've sent more 2,000-pound bombs. We cannot revert back to that. We have to make sure that when the president request something, that we have a means to enforce it.
Yeah, and over the weekend, it was the six-month anniversary of the October 7th attacks, which means there are still about 130 hostages still being held by Hamas. They were taken on October 7th. The family speaking out over the weekend.
Bringing the hostages back should be the top priority. It should be a world top priority. Everyone looking for de-escalation in the region should be opening the sentence saying, you know, release the hostages. You know, any sentence of any demand of ceasefire without release of hostages is a death sentence to them.
Yeah, that's what makes me think this war is far from over, because Israel's not going to end it before they have those hostages back home.
Everything can end if Hamas gives back the hostages and puts on the weapon.
Yeah, and over the weekend, there was a rally in Times Square outside the United Nations as well and up at Yeshiva University. And we'll get to those in a moment. But first, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Monday. Good morning, Justin Ellis.
Happy Monday. Good morning to you, Noam Olayden. start here at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx yesterday. Giancarlo Stanton hit a loud tie-breaking grand slam in the third inning, and the Yanks beat the Toronto Blue Jays 8-3 for their eighth win in 10 games to start the season. Stanton also homered Saturday in a three-hit game that followed a 3-for-24 start, so he's heating up. That's a good sign. He homered in consecutive games for the first time since going deep in three straight games last August. The Yankees have won their first three series. They're off to their best 10-game start since 2020. Out of the trainer's room for the Yanks, ace Gerrit Cole with that right elbow inflammation. He'll play catch in the next few days, possibly as soon as today. It'll be his first time throwing since getting injured. Also, DJ LeMahieu with his bruised right foot fielded ground balls at third base, made throws to first base, and also did some light running between first and second. Up next for the Bombers, they'll open up a three-game set tonight at home against the 1-9 Miami Marlins. First pitch from Yankee Stadium scheduled for 6:05 p.m. with Nestor Cortez set to get the start. Out in Cincinnati, Francisco Lindor hit a home run and ended a personal 0-for-24 skid, and the Mets beat the Reds 3-1. Lindor was 1-for-31 this season coming into the game. It was the third longest hitless streak of his career. Sean Manaea had another strong out on the hill as well. He lowered his ERA to 0.82 after allowing one run and three hits in five innings. He walked two and struck out six. The victory gave the Mets their first series win of the season after that 0-5 start. A four-game series in Atlanta begins tonight with veteran righty Julio Teheran set to make his Mets debut. First pitch there scheduled for 7:20 p.m. In the NHL, Mika Zibanejad had two goals and an assist. Artemi Panarin had a goal and three assists, and the Rangers beat the Canadiens 5-2 in Montreal. Chris Kreider and Alexis Lafreniere also scored, and Igor Shesterkin had 26 saves to help the Rangers get their 53rd win to tie a franchise record set in 2014-2015. New York has won 8 of its last 9 games and 13 of the last 16 contests at home. The Rangers have 110 points to lead Boston by 3 points for the most in the NHL, with 4 games remaining in the regular season for both teams. In Newark, the Devils fell 3-2 in a shootout at home to the Nashville Predators. Jack Hughes and Chris Tierney scored for the Devils in regulation, but production clearly lacked for Jersey in the extra frame and shootout thereafter. They recorded a franchise-best 112 points last season. They're currently on the outside of a wild-card playoff berth in the East with just 4 games remaining. They're 5 points behind the Red Wings for the second wild-card berth out of the East. On the NBA hardwood in Milwaukee, Jalen Brunson scored 43, and the Knicks surged in the second half to win 122-109 and hand the Bucks their fourth consecutive loss. Brunson is a Buck killer this season, averaging 37.2 points in 5 games against Milwaukee this year. Milwaukee is a game ahead of the Knicks in Orlando in the race for the Eastern Conference number 2 playoff seed behind the Boston Celtics. In Brooklyn, the officially eliminated and still lowly Nets got routed by the visiting Sacramento Kings. Final score there, 107-77. On the college hardwood, with their 87-75 win over the Iowa Hawkeyes in the women's NCAA tournament title game, the South Carolina Gamecocks are your late-in national champs and became the 10th team in Division I history to complete an undefeated season at 38-0.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, they did not.
Did you watch this game, that game?
One single game. I actually didn't see that game. I did. I saw the Final Four games, but I didn't see the national championship game yesterday. All of a sudden, I looked to see what time the game was at, and the game was over.
Yeah, because it was middle of the day.
Yeah. Exactly.
I had the same thing because I watched the Iowa take on who was it? Who did they beat? UConn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good game.
That was a great. Well, then they had that foul at the end. That was controversial. Yeah. Out in Glendale, Arizona tonight, Nome, you got to look forward, though, to the men's national championship. Purdue and UConn, two number one seeds, go out at each other in a battle of the beasts. Tip off for that game, 9:20 p.m. tonight. It's UConn that heads in as 6.5-point favorites. Also breaking out of the college basketball world, John Calipari is finalizing a 5-year deal to become the next men's basketball coach at Arkansas. Sources did reveal to ESPN last night. Calipari's contract is expected to have an overall base salary of slightly less than $8.5 million he's making at Kentucky currently. However, the deal is expected to be incentive laden with the ability to pass that number. All accounts should be completed by the end of the day today. That's your sports gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 5:21. Let's go down to Washington. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee says Russian propaganda has made its way onto the House floor.
We see directly coming from Russia attempts to mask communications that are anti-Ukraine and pro-Russia messages, some of which we even hear being uttered on the House floor. I mean, there are members of Congress today who still incorrectly say that this conflict between Russia and Ukraine is over NATO, which of course it is not.
That's Ohio Republican Mike Turner, who's upset about this. He says the anti-Ukraine, pro-Russia messages being echoed by some of his colleagues colleagues in Congress. He says he's just sort of amazed by that. He was also asked about the fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Georgia congresswoman, wants the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, to step down. Is he in favor of that, too?
I don't think he's at any risk. I think that, what people have been referring to as the Chaos Caucus, those individuals who are seeking attention for themselves and trying to stop all of the important work in Congress, are now seen as merely disruptive.
522, let's go out to the race for the White House. Country singer Lee Greenwood partnering with former President Trump to sell those God Bless the USA Bibles. I didn't know that he was part of that project. He did an interview over the weekend. Spoke, he says, with a group of immigrants who had become American citizens, did Lee Greenwood. And he says that's when he came up with the idea of selling these Bibles.
And I said, well, then, are you a Christian? And I said, about 70% of them are. And so what's wrong, then, with putting documents of our founded fathers with a Bible?
So these Bibles, which cost $60, they come with a few extras not found in normal Bibles. They include a chorus to Greenwood's hit, God Bless the USA, as well as a U.S. Constitution and a Declaration of Independence, a copy of them, obviously.
It sort of just came to me after I had sang in New York for a lot of immigrants who have became American citizens.
523, there is growing optimism in the Democratic Party that Florida could be in play in the upcoming presidential election. But Florida Republican Senator Rick Scott, he's not buying it. He believes the GOP will totally dominate in the Sunshine State come November.
He's got a lot of pickup opportunities. I think Trump he's run a great primary. I think he's going to run a great general election. I think that's going to help us, win a majority in the Senate and keep a majority in the House.
But President Biden's campaign thinks the abortion issue may help them in Florida, and that's why they think it could be up for grabs. Voters in the state will vote on a proposed amendment to enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution come November. And that's where Democrats think they have some sort of chance, but Rick Scott says that's nonsense.
We should win Montana. We have a great chance to pick up Nevada and Arizona.
Yeah, he thinks that actually could be the opposite, that Trump will pick up some Democratic states. Meanwhile, President Biden could have some trouble getting on the Ohio ballot for this year's general election.
On Friday, Ohio officials asked for clarification on an apparent scheduling conflict between the Ohio Secretary of State's office and the Democratic National Convention. The DNC plans to nominate Biden for the general election on August 19th. However, Ohio's nomination deadline is nearly 2 weeks earlier. It means Biden could be ruled ineligible to appear on Ohio's ballot. Biden's campaign told ABC News, quote, "We're monitoring the situation in Ohio and we're confident that Joe Biden will be on the ballot in all 50 states." I'm Jim Forbes.
Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson says he's not going to endorse a presidential candidate in this year's election. So how are we going to know who to vote for? The actor, WWE superstar, says his decision is because he got such bad reaction when he endorsed President Biden back in 2020.
Oh, man, that caused an incredible amount of division in our country. So I realize now going into this election, I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't do that because my goal is to bring our country together.
Now, there was a report that the No Labels Party asked Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson to run as a candidate. Not sure if that's true, but The Rock says he's going to keep his opinions this election season to himself.
Am I happy with the state of America right now? Well, that answer is no. Do I believe we're going to get better? I believe in that. I'm an optimistic guy, and I believe we can get better.
He has talked about running for the White House before. Don't know how serious he is.
Well, like a lot of us out there, not trusting of all politicians, I do trust the American people, and I trust that whoever they vote for, that's going to be my president, and that's who I'm going to support 100%.
525, today marks the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron breaking the Major League Baseball career home run record that had been held till that time by Babe Ruth. It was April 8th of 1974 that Hammer and Hank entered the Atlanta Braves game against the Los Angeles Dodgers and tied with Ruth. He had tied with Ruth at 714 home runs, and that's the game where he came up in the bottom of the fourth and sent an Al Downing pitch into the left field stands for the record breaker.
There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7:15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
It's one of those moments that if you're a baseball fan, you probably remember where you are and where you watch that. The Braves plan a number of celebrations today when they host the Mets. There'll be a ribbon-cutting ceremony. It'll take place at Atlanta History Center for an exhibit called More Than Brave, The Life of Henry Aaron. That's going to come a little bit later today. Let's take a look at the markets. The opening bell, it rings this morning after stocks close higher Friday to wrap up a losing week on Wall Street. The major indexes all lost ground for the week on growing fears that the Fed will delay cutting interest rates. At the close bell on Friday, the Dow gained 307 points, S&P 500 rose 57, the Nasdaq climbed 199 points.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports, and now
Talking the News with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 532. Good morning. It is Monday, April 8th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sun, clouds today. Going to be a beauty. High 63. Tonight and overnight, those clouds, they hang around, low 52, and then Tuesday, even nicer, partly cloudy, but actually we'll call it mostly sunny, high 73. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are, 37 clear in New City up in Rockland County. It's 36 and clear in Edison down in New Jersey, and it is 43 and clear outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour with those aftershocks that keep coming and will keep coming for at least a week. That's what scientists are telling us after that 4.8 magnitude earthquake shook us on Friday. Maybe you felt some of the aftershocks over the weekend. I had this moment on Friday. I was off and I was having a late breakfast sitting at my kitchen table when that first one hit it, the 4.8, and my neighbors were doing construction. So I thought, geez, what are they doing that my whole foundation of my house is shaking? In one of those bizarre moments, and that's what I thought it was. I was like, okay. And I went to go knock on my neighbor's door to say, what the hell are you doing over there that my entire house is shaking? And as I did, I got a text from Anthony Weiner saying, hey, did you feel that? And I was like, oh, wait a minute. This must have been an earthquake. So it was Anthony who alerted me to that. And then I called into the station and we went live and did great coverage. They did great coverage all day on Friday of the earthquake. But it was a crazy moment for most of us. Aftershocks most of the weekend. Friday around 6 o'clock, there was one that shook people and said, oh no, it wasn't as intense, but it was like a 4.0.
I don't want to scare anyone, but it is possible there could be a larger aftershock. The probabilities are just much lower.
Yeah, that's some of the scientists who follow this kind of thing. So they say it could last for at least 7 days. So figure if it was Friday. Did you feel anything over the weekend? Friday was the last time I felt anything. These aftershocks since Friday have all been like 2.0. Where there was some problems, Newark seemed to be the issue. There were some building issues there where people were chased from their homes.
The earthquake, and then maybe it shifted the house a little bit. Can you tell it like shifted?
Yeah, so some people who were closest to the epicenter of that earthquake in Tewksbury, New Jersey, there were some roofs that were some issue, but no like major issues.
I couldn't believe it until my daughter called me and said, Ma, did you feel that? And I said, oh, what was it? And she said it was an earthquake.
Yeah, and then the aftershocks came in. The NYPD, by the way, telling us that they quickly jumped into action after that 4.8 magnitude earthquake hit. They used drones all weekend to search for any possible issues that might have happened to city bridges or any other sort of infrastructure. And thankfully, they didn't really find a whole lot.
They seen something, so I can send this text message to the Department of Building Commissioner Jimmy Otto, and he can look and have his engineers right there in his office look to see what's going on. So far, we have seen nothing.
I was watching Jano Lieber. He's, of course, the CEO and chairman of the MTA. He was on Marsha Kramer's show, which I think is called The Point on CBS. And so she was asking him, this was yesterday morning, you know, what have you seen? What have you done? Have you looked at the train tunnels, subway tunnels, the MTA bridges and tunnels? How does it all fare?
Within 5 minutes after the earthquake, we were checking the Queens Midtown Tunnel, the Hugh Carey Battery Tunnel, the bridges as well. And there was literally no impacts, no discernible impacts. Now, those investigations continue with engineering professionals. But I got to say, bridges and tunnels are designed for a much higher level of seismic activity than we received.
And they continue to check the subway tunnels all weekend. Now, of course, they're always checking the subway tunnels, but they were doing double duty over the weekend to make sure that there were no problems with the tracks, that kind of thing.
We have teams out doing inspections always of the tunnels, the subway tunnels, and that continued as well. And the crews were under, the operating crews were all under instructions to report any abnormalities. It was a clean sweep as far as we were concerned.
Yeah, so no problems. We like that. Back in Tewksbury, which was the epicenter, there was some issues, but again, nothing major, no injuries.
No one reported any injuries. Any damage reports that we've gotten to this point are relatively minor.
Now, if you thought Friday's earthquake was a shocker, imagine being in surgery at the time. Dr. John Paul Tatula is a plastic surgeon in Livingston who had a patient on the operating table during the quake. He was doing a breast enlargement surgery when the earthquake took place. And he spoke to News 12 about what happened during the surgery.
I was actually in the middle of an operation, of a breast augmentation operation, and I was just sitting the patient up to see, you know, how everything looked. And really at that moment, her breast started jiggling.
You can't make that up. So he was like, what is going on here? Because she's under, but her breasts are moving. But then he realized the entire room was moving.
You're making incisions, dissecting, you know, skin and breast tissue away from the chest wall, making sure any bleeding is under control. And, you know, during that whole process, you know, you're obviously near other vital structures.
He said everything was fine, though, but, of course, a humorous moment during the earthquake. WABC News Time, 5:39. There was some violence over the weekend. A 16-year-old shot yesterday afternoon in Harlem. Search underway for the gunman. This was the corner of Frederick Douglass Boulevard between West's 113th and 114th Street. There were a lot of eyewitnesses because it was just beautiful. I was in the city yesterday. It was gorgeous outside. So tons of people outside. This is about 2:30 in the afternoon when the 16-year-old was shot.
He fell to the ground on the street over here, and he was just very bleeding from his stomach. It's a little shaken. It was definitely shocking. Hearing the one pop.
Yeah, so after the 16-year-old was shot, he continued apparently to run. So that suggests maybe it was some sort of targeted shooting. We don't know all the details yet. Then he collapsed. They think he's going to be okay, so that's the good news.
After the first pop, he was like, call 911, call 911. He was just screaming and running. He was still moving. He was still pretty agitated, and it just created a whole commotion.
Teenager rushed to the hospital. Witnesses say a group of teens were at the corner moments before the shooting, just after they took off. This victim screamed for help. Carrie Samuels is a mom who lives in the neighborhood and says, thankfully, this thing doesn't happen as often as it used to, but of course, it's frightening when it does.
It's very disheartening on a Sunday afternoon, you know, in Harlem. It's a peaceful day. I'm a New Yorker, so I'm always scavenging, you know, looking around. I'm always looking around behind my back, so no matter where you go, it's never safe.
The police telling us last night that this wounded teenager taken into surgery, and once he regains consciousness, he'll be able to speak with police, hopefully shed some light onto what happened, what led to his shooting. 5:41, a person was stabbed on the Manhattan subway. This was early Sunday morning. 34-year-old stabbed in the back about 5 a.m. at the Lexington Avenue 53rd Street station. He was stabbed as he sat on a southbound E train. Sources say the stabber was known to the victim, so maybe there was some sort of fight. We just don't know yet. This all comes after Mayor Adams had told us over the weekend that subway crime is down, but the perception is that subway crime is way up.
These guys can bring crime down to zero, but if you don't feel safe because you see this disorder going on, then you're going to say that, hey, we're not safe. And so what we are doing, what this team is doing, is making sure our officers are visible.
Yes, so we don't know the condition of this person who was stabbed over the weekend or the circumstances just yet that led to a stabbing. Of course, as that information comes into us, we'll pass it on to you. Over the weekend, it was the six-month anniversary of those hostages being taken back on October 7th from Israel, pulled into Gaza by Hamas. Some of the hostage families were in New York City holding a rally outside the United Nations, asking the United Nations to do more to get these hostages freed. Some of these hostages, of course, have been freed, and some of those families are still taking part in helping the other ones get freed.
I do believe that the best way is to strike a deal as soon as possible.
Yeah, so that's Louis Haar. His father-in-law was one of the people who was freed, but he says he's been out there advocating for other hostage families. There was a number of rallies across the city. There was one on Long Island. There was one up at Yeshiva University, that one at the UN that I told you about. Here is the president of Yeshiva University speaking out about this.
This is unconscionable that there are American citizens that are being held right now in conditions that we know have been described by the released hostages as filled with abuse and even rape, and that we are sitting here and have not used the full measure of our resources to pressure Hamas to free our hostages.
Yeah, so it's been, let's see, I think it's 185 days as of today.
184 days. It's indescribable, the pain. I've met many of these hostage families.
The images and the stories I heard from survivors and those impacted will be with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so this rally, the one you're hearing from there, is the one that took place in Midtown. If you've been following this story, there's been enormous talk about how Israeli troops pulled out of most of Gaza over the weekend. They've left some troops there. Not clear if this is about restoring and giving some of these troops some rest so they can go back in, or whether this is the beginning of some sort of ceasefire process. The Israelis are saying, no, it's not part of a ceasefire process. No one's sure. That was part of the talk yesterday at these hostage rallies.
Imagine that after that, it took them 76 days being alone, not knowing what's happening, not having any connection, any contacts, any news.
Yeah, of course, that's the horrible part, is the hostages that have been freed have been able to relay pretty clearly what it's like for the people who are still being held captive. And you can only imagine the last time they released hostages were months ago. So it has to be 100 times worse than it was just a couple months ago. So just a bad scene. It's not clear. It's about 130, the number they keep throwing around of the hostages still being held in Gaza. It's not clear how many of them are alive or what kind of shape they would be in. But the prospects of a ceasefire, apparently, all sides have been in talks with Egypt over the last 24 to 48 hours. And, of course, we'll continue to follow that story. All right, 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Ellick.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Start here at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx yesterday. Giancarlo Stanton hit a very loud tie-breaking grand slam in the third inning, and the Yanks beat the Toronto Blue Jays 8-3 for their eighth win in 10 games to start the season. Stanton, he's getting a little hotter. He had a homer on Saturday as well. Yanks have won the first three series and are off to their best 10-game start since 2020. Out of the trainer's room for the Bombers, Ace Garrett Cole will play catch in the next few days, possibly as soon as today. It'll be his first time throwing since getting injured. Also, DJ LeMay, who he fielded ground balls at third base, made throws to first and also did some light base running. Up next for the Bombers, they'll open up a three-game set tonight at home against the 1-9 Miami Marlins. First pitch there from Yankee Stadium is scheduled for 6:05 p.m. with Nestor Cortez set to get the start. Out in Cincinnati, Francisco Lindor hit a home run and ended a personal 0-for-24 skid, and the Mets beat the Reds 3-1. It was the longest hitless streak of his career. Sean Manea had another strong outing on the hill. He lowered his ERA to .82 after allowing one run and three hits in five innings. He walked two and struck out six. The victory gave the Mets their first series win of the season after an 0-5 start. Four-game series with Atlanta begins tonight with veteran righty Julio Teheran set to make his Mets debut. First pitch from Atlanta, scheduled for 7:20 p.m. In the NHL, Mika Zibanejad had two goals and an assist. Artemi Panarin had a goal and three assists, and the Rangers beat the Canadiens 5-2 in Montreal. Kreider and Lafreniere also scored, and Shesterkin had 26 saves to help the Rangers get their 53rd win to tie a franchise record set in 2014-2015. New York has won 8 of its last 9 and 13 of their last 16 contests at home. The Rangers have 110 points to lead Boston by 3 points for the most in the NHL, with 4 games remaining in the regular season for both teams. In Newark, the Devils fell 3-2 in a shootout at home to the Nashville Predators. Devils recorded a franchise best 112 points last season, are currently on the outside of a wild card playoff berth in the Eastern Conference with just 4 games remaining. They are 5 points behind the Detroit Red Wings for the second wild card berth out of the East. On the NBA hardwood in Milwaukee, Jalen Brunson scored 43 points, and the Knicks surged in the second half to win 122-109 and hand the Bucks their fourth consecutive loss. Brunson is a buck killer this season, I should say, averaging 37.2 points in five games against Milwaukee this year. The Bucks are facing their longest losing streak this season, have dropped six of their last seven. Milwaukee is a game ahead of the Knicks and Orlando Magic in the race for the Eastern Conference's number two playoffs seed beyond the Boston Celtics. In Brooklyn, the officially eliminated and still lowly Nets get routed by the visiting Sacramento Kings. Final score there, 107-77. On the college hardwood, with an 87-75 win over the Iowa Hawkeyes in the women's NCAA tournament title game, the South Carolina Gamecocks are your Lady National champs and became the 10th team in Division I history to complete an undefeated season at 38-0. So congrats on being perfect there. Out in Glendale, Arizona tonight, 2-1 seeds are all that's left of the men's NCAA tournament field. Purdue and UConn will go at each other in a battle of the beasts for the right to call themselves national champions. Tip-off for the national championship game set for 9:20 p.m., and it's UConn that heads in as 6.5-point favorites. Also breaking out of the college basketball world, John Calipari is finalizing a five-year deal to become the next men's basketball coach at Arkansas. Sources revealed to ESPN last night, Calipari's contract is expected to have an overall base salary of slightly less than the $8.5 million he's making at Kentucky. However, the deal is expected to be incentive-laden with the ability to pass that number. By all accounts, that deal should be done by the end of the day today. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
All right, we're just about 9.5 hours away from the big event that so many people are waiting for, the big solar eclipse. 14 states across the country will get totality where it'll look definitely like nighttime. Here, New York City, it's like 91% coverage, so it'll be dark, but not nighttime. It'll last for about 4.5 minutes. I asked my 16-year-old at his school, they're handing out glasses, and then I guess after school he can go out and watch it. And I said, so are you going to watch it? And he's like, I don't care, which I thought was such a great response. It's like, so? I think a lot of Americans may feel that way as well, and there's plenty of others who are like, you know, jazzed about this, have paid big money to get to places like Syracuse, where the hotel rooms were hard to find because that's one of the places that's the closest one to us with totality. And so the locals there have seen the tourists have moved in over the weekend.
The town is buzzing. We've been talking about it for months, but just over the past couple of weeks, things have really picked up. Everybody's got their plans. Everybody's got their glasses. All the local bakeries and donut shops have their eclipse-themed goods.
Yeah, so here's the issue up in Syracuse and a number of places where it'll be a full-on eclipse is that it's going to be cloudy today. So people are upset about that.
It almost feels like I'm always getting the short end of the stick nowadays. So that's unfortunate. But hopefully the clouds clear up and we see a little bit of something.
Students at Syracuse University, they haven't been told that they're excused from class, but I imagine a fair amount of them will excuse themselves.
The only class I have tomorrow is from 2:15 to 3:35. Right, and obviously during the path of totality, so most people are canceling class, professors and people are skipping. It's like, do I skip class? Do I leave early? I don't know what I'm going to do.
Are you like me? There was one, of course, in 2017, a solar eclipse, and I have almost zero memory of it. So I don't know what that means, but experts reminding you, I guess I have to say this, that you need to wear some sort of approved glasses if you're going to stare at the lunar eclipse. I think that would be obvious.
Much more effective. Your standard sunglasses aren't going to be as effective. You can still cause damage to
your
eyes.
Yes, so you need the approved ones. The public library here in the city, all of the branches have been giving them out. Don't know if they have many left. I saw that people were desperately searching for these glasses yesterday. They were hard to find.
Hold it up and you'll get like 1,000 little suns on the wall, and you can just watch it that way.
Oh, so I should point out, so if you don't have a pair of these glasses, but you want to have that sort of effect of looking at it, you can take a spaghetti drainer, like a colander, I guess is the best way to describe it, and you'll get that pinhole effect on the ground. So this might be one way of, instead of staring again at the lunar eclipse, which, I mean, you wouldn't stare at the sun, so why would you stare at the lunar eclipse?
Hold it up, and you'll get like 1,000 little suns on the wall, and you can just watch it that way.
Yeah. Do we need to explain why it's bad to look at the sun? Well, here is Dr. Nitish Mehta. He's an ophthalmologist at NYU.
You used to go outside and you take your little magnifying glass and you shine it on the blade of grass. Imagine that's happening for 3 to 5 minutes on the back of your retina.
Yeah, you're just an idiot if you do that, if you stare at it. The solar eclipse, here's the issue, may have effect on some animals. Christina Hayak of the Cranberry Lake Preserve, that's up in Westchester County, she says wildlife may think it's already nighttime when the moon blocks the sun.
Some of our nocturnal animals might come out. Our owls might start calling. Our frogs might start calling. Vultures might come to roost.
Well, I mean, that'd be kind of cool if that happens. I don't know if it will.
The eclipse is kind of like having a sunset and a sunrise in the middle of the day.
Yeah, and so apparently that can be kind of confusing to animals. One thought was, I saw people online asking if they had created these glasses for dogs, which seems sort of silly. But the thought is you should probably leave your dog at home. Dogs are not usually ones to stare at the sun, so I don't think it's really an issue if you do decide to bring them out to watch this. Scientists, though, say it is interesting to see how animals respond to this kind of thing. In past solar eclipses, some cows have acted differently. Tortoises apparently have gotten it on. Apparently the eclipse got them all excited. So they'll be watching that today. And then you have tourists who have come from all over the world to the U.S. to see this. Some of those tourists are here in New York and paid money to be at the top of the Empire State Building during the solar eclipse later today.
It's a magic because you will have like a night during the day. Even if it's only 2 minutes, I think it's one of the things you don't see every time, because the next one will be maybe in, we will always not be in this world.
I'm probably never going to get another opportunity to see it, so I'm glad it happens while we're here.
Yeah, all right. So this is the one you want to see unless you're a youngster, because the next one won't happen till 2079. There is some clouds in the forecast for this afternoon, but they say it'd probably be okay here. It is essentially like a 2 hour long event. So what?
I'm begging you.
What's that?
Stop it.
Stop what?
We're pulling to the trap that everybody's talking about. Now we have to do that.
Which trap is that?
This ridiculous eclipse.
You're not into the eclipse.
Ay, ay, ay. You're going to stand outside for hours.
Yes.
You may or may not see it because it's going to be cloudy out anyway, but who cares?
Oh.
The sun is going to go dark, so what?
Well, it doesn't happen very often that the sun goes dark unless it's nighttime. Usually in the middle of the day, it's not dark like it is. Have you seen any of the video of, you know, it's complete darkness? People are like sitting on the beach and they're having a party.
I'm begging you. We're about to surrender basically in Gaza. We're pulling out our troops.
Right.
We have the most important election of our lifetime coming up November the 5th.
Right.
And you're talking about a bunch of morons,
well,
literally morons.
It is just
running
for the
out
day.
To buy glasses to try to catch a glimpse of something that doesn't mean anything.
Right. And here I am, by the way, warning people all morning not to stare directly.
I mean, I'm begging
solar eclipse. Well, let me just tell you, that starts at 2:10 p.m. The beginning of all this. The whole event lasts just 2 solid hours. 4:30, it'll be over. The height of it will be at 3:25 this afternoon, which I know Sid will be outside with no glasses on, staring directly at it.
So. I'll be asleep. I'll listen to Frank Morano and Dr. Sky talk about it tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly.
All right. I mean, I can't believe they got viewing parties.
Yeah. Oh, you have to pay big money to go to the top of the Rock or to the Empire State Building and include champagne and glasses.
How boring is your life? Is what you're looking forward to?
There's a lot of people out there who are. This is, you know, people who've driven up to Rochester, Syracuse.
Morons.
Cities they've never would thought to go to travel to ever in their lives before. They're
retards.
Now spending the weekend there.
Listen to me carefully. Retards. Anybody who is really that excited today that would drive miles and miles is a retard.
By the way, did you hear that they're going to time Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, the 41-minute album, 53 seconds, to expertly end just as the solar eclipse is at full throttle? And so you can listen to this one station, I don't remember where it is, and they will time it perfectly, which will be quite exciting.
More exciting would be if Roger Waters died on the eclipse actually happened. How about that?
So it'll go. How exciting is that? Just as its totality, you'll be hearing to Roger Waters and Dark Side of the Moon. Yeah, I can't wait.